Well, how and when will the Reserve Bank move away from stimulating the economy through cheap and plentiful money? In the face of the COVID pandemic last year, the government and central bank bolstered the economy through a combination of measures to help it bounce back after the virus was eliminated and the first lockdown finished. The government produced a $50 billion pandemic response package, which saved many jobs but increased government debt. The Reserve Bank supported that government spending through its bond buying program, a means of printing money. Its cheap loans to banks will continue unchanged, it said recently, and it's ready to cut the official cash rate if needed. The Reserve Bank's bond buying program of up to $100 billion is its key means of supporting economic stimulus alongside low interest rates, a strategy matched by central banks around the world. Quantitative easing is the modern version of printing money, where the central bank electronically issues New Zealand dollars to itself and uses that to buy securities such as government bonds from the market. But the huge stimulus in response to the pandemic is also driving up asset prices such as real estate and shares, severely impacting the cost of housing. So what is the exit strategy for quantitative easing for our Reserve Bank, for other central banks around the world? And what will be the economic circumstances we face as we come out of this dramatic economic shock? Dr. John McDermott is the Executive Director of the Independent Economic Research Institute, Motu, and renowned internationally as a macroeconomist. He is a former Assistant Governor and Chief Economist at the Reserve Bank. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. It is a pleasure to be here and I'm wonderful to be in a place where we can do this in person.
Aren't we lucky? Lucky in working for it and all those things. When I spoke to you right back in the thick of this, I recall you saying, right back in the thick of the economic response, the lockdowns, I recall you saying, you know, economists will be writing books about this event. Are you ready to start one? It is a little different than it was then. The worst of the unemployment, the worst of the economic hit here and perhaps globally was not realised. And was that because of this massive stimulus central banks and governments have undertaken?
Yes, I think when we come to writing the book, and I think I'll try and avoid it myself, it will be written in four acts. And I think you just reviewed the first two acts. You know, there was a massive lockdown, people stopped spending, firms stopped investing. Of course, that meant jobs were at risk. And there was a massive fiscal and monetary policy response. And normally, when you think about fiscal policy, it's so hard to enact fast. It comes too slow. But this time, it was rapid. And the beauty of fiscal policy, when you have it in place, it affects spending in the economy immediately. Monetary policy, you can act it fast, and the Reserve Bank could do it today if they wished, but it takes a long time to work. So you had this big build-up. So those were the first two acts. You had the hit, you had the response, and now we're at the crux of the problem where it's a big decision, and there's a big, fierce international debate about whether inflation will be a problem or whether it will be a temporary issue. And on the markets are getting very concerned about this. So we're seeing Wall Street wobble. It's very volatile. It sold off yesterday because they see the inflation problem. And we saw overnight, US inflation has now gone above 4%. So people are very worried about this, very scared. And yet, central banks around the world are saying, this is a temporary problem, that we've still got a bigger problem with the economy, and that's what we need to deal with.
So that's what our conversation is about. What is going to be their thinking as they try to steady the ship without it listing from one economic problem to another? What did you say the US inflation rate had hit?
4.2.
Ooh, interesting. And it had a poorer than expected jobs report out, I think, a week or two ago, which actually saw the markets go phew, which is a strange thing to say, isn't it? But the fear is that there'll be such a big economic rebound or an overheating. We know that economies have limits to what they can do, and when they strike those limits, that's when you get inflationary pressures, yeah?
Yes, and I think the third act, when I talk about these different phases, we're worried about the supply side of the economy, the supply response. We're seeing all these problems with supply chain disruptions. So many factories were closed around the world. There's not enough goods and services being produced. Consumers have come out of this with excess savings, and they want to enjoy themselves. And so we're seeing these pressures build.
Let's talk about those inflationary pressures. They can come from either side. Supply side pressures, we see it here. shortages of just about everything in the building sector, including fittings and plumbing and these kinds of things. And when there's a shortage, what happens? Price goes up, right? And if there's delays in the building of your house or whatever else you're having built, the costs go up. So that's a supply side pressure on inflation, the price of goods. The other's the demand side. And what is the story here? What we've seen the most is massive asset price inflation, yeah? Can you speak to it?
So when we think of, so central banks around the world injected vast amounts of money into the system, and that affects asset markets, on all asset markets. On the asset markets, the central banks want to affect are bonds. They want interest rates to go down in that. Well, and that certainly happened. But we also saw stock markets increase. We've seen housing market increase. I mean, for goodness sake, we even saw a bubble in Bitcoin to go to crazy levels. So we've seen all these assets, and that's a consequence of quantitative easing.
Because interest rates are low, putting money in the bank, and even in term deposits in the bank, is bringing you very little. So you're looking to put it in places that give you faster growth.
Yeah.
And that's money being readily available and cheaply available. That's what you get. Interestingly, the asset price inflation isn't fully or even really significantly accounted for in our CPI figures, is it? That basket of goods that we use for headline inflation.
Now, the consumer price index is a basket of consumer goods. It's what you and I go and purchase on a regular basis. It's the things that you find in the supermarket. It is the cost of living. And normally you don't think about assets being part of your cost of living. So that's why it's excluded.
Is there some kind of housing cost incorporated in the CPI at all? Does it measure any kind of housing costs, accommodation costs?
So rents would be included.
Okay.
And certain building costs, so the cost of repairs and building
but
and maintenance.
Not the value of the assets. So this is the interesting thing. When we talk about how we've been in a long, low inflation environment, that's for everything except if you're trying to buy a house, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that house price inflation has been extremely high. What's happening with our CPI baskets of goods inflation? It's still within the band the Reserve Bank works to.
Oh, this has been an interesting cycle globally. It's highly accelerated. So we've seen prices collapse during the pandemic, and they've rebounded and very rapidly overseas. And New Zealand seems to be a bit behind the cycle, so our inflation rate's still around about 1.5, so it's below the midpoint of the current target range. So not an immediate concern for the Reserve Bank here.
So then it becomes a question of timing, doesn't it? The Reserve Bank's primary goal, it's getting more goals added to it all the time, but its primary goal is to stay within that target band, 1% to 3%, is it?
1% to 3%.
And it can look through for a period of time if it gets above that. Does it have any fear as it looks at clearly continuing holding the status quo, indicating the status quo perhaps even through to the end of next year when it comes to, say, at least the cash rate, which is what influences bank lending rates? Does it have any mind to inflation, or can you see it needing to have any mind to inflation in that basket of goods, that CPI?
An interesting time, and we've come to this point where there's a sort of fork in the road, and the concerns will be mounting. And one of the things we started talking about, this being now a supply side issue,
yes,
and supply shock.
Yes.
And what that does, not only does it increase prices for consumers, it also increases the cost of production for firms. And so for any living in any level of given prices, they make less profit. So what they do is they don't respond with the increase in productions of goods and services. So this is we're getting a minor echo of what economists would refer to as stagflation, where
yes,
you see poor labour outcomes, yet prices continue to increase. And that's because it's coming from the supply side. So that makes it really difficult. When you're trying to think, well, what do we do here? Is especially when you've got a mandate for inflation and a mandate for the labour market and employment, which they have, that becomes a tension. They have to decide which one of those goals they're looking at matters the most at the moment, and what does that do for the future?
If they're clearly indicating that supporting the economy is the priority at the moment and may continue through again, let's say through to the end of next year, when you do begin to exit, and perhaps we can move away even from our own Reserve Bank, I'd love you to comment, and then we'll talk about the biggest economies who are going to have the biggest impact on this whole thing. When you do begin to exit, how do you begin to exit from a prolonged and massive quantitative easing. For starters, they can start. They don't have to spend that $100 billion that they've indicated they're prepared to print, to use the cheap term. They can begin to move, or signal even that they're going to begin moving on a cash rate. Like, how do you begin to exit this?
Well, the other thing that will start to worry, when you start thinking about an exit strategy, you've seen a massive build-up in asset prices. When you even talk about exit strategy, markets
panic.
Anticipate what will happen in the future. I'm holding this asset. Is it about to lose value? What do I do with it? And rather than wait till the Reserve Bank actually makes the move, I'll sell now. So there's a real fear in overdoing things. And the markets are afraid that the Reserve Bank, or central banks globally actually, will have a knee-jerk reaction to some headline inflation. That will cause asset prices to collapse. And that, instead of being an inflationary process, will look more like it did in 2007, 2008, where you've got a financial market problem. And so you get this deflationary pressure. So they're worried about the exit strategy looks particularly dangerous and particularly ugly.
Will they perhaps just ease up on the quantitative easing? Will that make a difference? Or does that risk, as you said, you don't want producers pulling their haunches in? So what will they begin to do?
Well, in terms of quantitative easing or the size of central banks' balance sheets, I think they're going to be here for a decade.
That's mainly gone to the government too, we should be clear, haven't we? Has it mainly been used to buy the government bonds through the market, which allows the government to raise new debt? Is that where most of the bank's QE has gone?
In essence, yes. That's been the net outcome of all the processes.
Okay. So can that then just be sort of parked as, yes, we've supported government doing a huge amount of debt raising, and it's up to the government to manage that debt level down over time? Does that ease the risk of coming out of a QE program or not?
Well, we have to talk about the relationship between printing money, if you like, and inflation, because it's not the stock that matters. This is the difficult trick. It's the rate of growth. The faster I print money, I add to inflation, or I support inflation from a low level to get it to where it should be. At the end of that process, I am left with a big stock or a big central bank balance sheet. If I try to reduce that, that means the rate of growth of money is negative. That will bring inflation down. That will deflate the economy. So I think what you need to think about in terms of an exit strategy is, how do I hold that stock without it causing the damage it could otherwise do in terms of housing market problems? And how do I revert back to an interest rate policy to manage the business cycle?
So what are your options?
The high risk, there'll be a lot of tension. But I think the options are just to leave the balance sheet alone, and maybe opportunistically in the future, if the economy really grows, allow the economy to grow into the size of that balance sheet. But really try to revert back to when you're normalizing, and it's not today, and best part of this year, it's not this year, but when you are normalizing, revert back to moving interest rates upwards with your official cash rate.
Is there a bit of protection that while we want to do all this infrastructure building, there are natural constraints on it, being labor and supplies at the moment, and that might slow the pace or manage the pace at which it happens? Is that a risk because there's constraints, therefore price goes up, or is it actually quite helpful because you don't have a massive splurge of activity that might be inflationary?
Well, incredibly helpful late last year and this year, as you're trying to get the recovery to be self-sustaining. You kind of want that kind of development. As you hit the bottlenecks, then it becomes the constraint at the pace of which the recovery can take place. And it actually brings forward the day when the central banks have to start raising interest rates. And that's the concern we're now starting to see in financial markets. They're believing that data has been brought forward quite a long time, and they're reacting to it.
Do interest rates need to rise? Was that a failure of economic management after the GFC that they did not recover to a level when the next problem came that you could cut?
Yeah, well, yes and no. The tricky thing is try to increase them so you had enough ammunition next time without choking the economy. And we saw famous episode when the Fed just talked about not increasing rates, not even reducing the balance sheet, but they said tapering. We're going to slow the rate at which the balance sheet grows. And that was called tapering. And the markets had a tantrum. It was a taper tantrum. They were just so afraid of what the Federal Reserve could do here and the consequences on financial markets. They reacted as if they'd already done it. And that scared central banks, and they simply did not want to move too fast, and for understandable reasons.
The monetarists say, what is the famous phrase, inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. Will we see some? Do we need to be tolerant of it? In New Zealand, and we pioneered the assault on interest rates post the 1970s, the last stagflation. I was this high, but I can certainly remember the stresses of it. It does have the capacity to look through that band temporarily, right?
Temporarily, yes.
Which economies, though, will truly determine what happens to the global economy? Where are your eyes? United States, obviously, but where are your eyes going to be on the decisions made over the next 6, 12, 24 months?
Two places, China and the US. We're starting to see big pressure in China. China was having inflation in the negative zone late last year. That's bounced back. Their inflation rate's around 1%. But that's on the back of pork prices, which are very important in China, you know, collapsing 20%. So real inflation is high in China. They're the global manufacturing centre, if you like. There's big pressure on the system. They're starting to draw huge amounts of resources from the world. And we're seeing a big boom in Australia because of China's demand. That becomes an inflation shock to the world. Now, the issue is, how do you manage that? If you allow it to go too far, it becomes too big, and the consequences and the response become accelerated down the line.
What is an inflation shock in 2021? We knew what it looked like in the early 1980s. Horrible, and horrible rates of inflation. What would worry you about levels of inflation now after record lows for most of this century?
It's not the level of inflation.
It's the reaction.
It's what people think will happen in the future is the real concern. So we've seen now inflation will get to 4% in the US. We will see inflation globally. We will see it here. The central banks have said, look, it's temporary. Don't worry about it. They have to say that because it really matters to managing the economy. But if people don't believe it, and financial markets don't, but if people who buy goods and services do not believe it, they will start making bigger wage claims, and then we get the problem embedded as a permanent problem.
I also hear for you, perhaps our single biggest risk is a financial crisis led by panic by the markets as the adjustment happens. Is that what I'm hearing?
If we're too fast, if we respond too fast, on one side we get that panic, we get a deflationary shock. If we leave it too long and we embed the problem in people's views and expectations, we get the reverse problem. That's why we're at this crossroads, and either scenario is actually plausible at this point.
Have we seen anything quite like this? It's very interesting that the worry about inflation going so high, the worry about GDP crashing. If you look back on the history, say go back to the start of the 20th century, and obviously the Great Depression is the one everyone looks back to, and the way this has been managed and the way this event has unfolded, is it unique?
Well, there's certainly lots of elements that are unique. The way the pandemic hit the world and the very accelerated fall and rebound of the economies is unique. But it also has echoes of other developments. And the supply side shock that it's looking closer to is the era of the late 60s, where you add fiscal policy being expansionary, inflation creeped up, the central banks ignored it, it crept up a little bit more, it got more, and eventually lots of rich countries ended up with double-digit inflations, and the cure was horrendous and painful.
Housing and this massive explosion of house prices, is it perhaps one of the single greatest risks we face to a drastic adjustment? Not because an adjustment might not come, but because of just what you said, people have bought very high. Some people have bought at 20 or 23% higher than a place was being sold a year ago, right? Don't know what's happened to that house since, but is there a risk of panic if we start to see a modest adjustments to house prices, or if we start to see interest rates creeping up?
Yeah, absolutely. So globally, you worry about all assets. You worry about bond prices, stock prices, But New Zealand's wealth is heavily concentrated in housing, and you've seen the symptoms of the QE manifest itself here in our housing prices. So this is where, so locally, that's what we have to worry about.
Is the message, don't panic, stuff's going to happen, things are going to change and move, and we're going to be talking about things like inflation again, and yes, you might see your stock, your KiwiSaver come down again. Is it going to be don't panic over the next couple of years?
Yeah, but it also means officials have to be able to explain their actions, their plans, this is their intent, this is how they're seeing things, and they have to be clear that we have an exit strategy, so don't worry about it. We do have one. But by the way, we're not implementing it today because it's too early. You have to be both clear on what it is and when they're thinking it might be necessary.
What's Chapter 4, by the way? Do we all hold hands and skip around in a happily balanced economy with no damn COVID? What's Chapter 4?
Well, there's three possible outcomes. One is we get the deflationary shock. I hope not. That would be the worst. One alternative is central banks leave it too late and we get this inflation problem. We're back to the 70s. I think the most likely outcome is we're going to get a little bit of inflation. It won't last, but it will happen at the time when our labour markets simply don't recover and we'll get disappointing real economy benefits. The economy just won't perform as well as we hoped and we can't really support it because inflation's just a little bit too high.
John, thank you. So appreciate the insight and the time. Thank you. John McDermott, he's Executive Director of the Independent Economic Research Institute, Mutu, and a former Assistant Governor and Chief Economist at the Reserve Bank. Not sure if he's got any plans to pop back for a while. It'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yes.